The Wall Street Journal recently published an article that said Iran ordered Hamas to invade southern Israel. Richard Silverstein is a journalist and activist who writes for the Tikkun Olam blog. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg about that issue as well as the broader situation in Israel and Palestine.
What about this story about Iran ordering Hamas to stage the invasion? Is that even plausible, or was it just totally made up, do you think?
It's a hoax that was perpetrated by Israel, and the Wall Street Journal was taken in by it. It reported that there were secret meetings in Beirut between Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas, in which the Gaza attack in southern Israel was planned and ordered by the Iranians. What actually happened, according to an Israeli security source I spoke with, was that probably Bibi Netanyahu himself planted this leak, and he was able to fool the Wall Street Journal reporters into believing that they had sources which they explicitly said were from Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran. And it's totally implausible that the Wall Street Journal, a right-wing pro-Israel publication, would have been given such access to such figures. But it's clear, it's definite that the Israelis were the source, and it probably was Netanyahu, because he would be ideologically very close to the Wall Street Journal.
And he has a thing about Iran. He's been going on for years and years about how Iran is this terrorist state, and he seems to be trying to get the United States to go to war with Iran. Is this just sort of part of that kind of narrative that he's pushing?
Well, absolutely. I think it is. He's trying to deflect blame for the security failures of allowing the Hamas attack against Israel. And he uses Iran as his whipping boy for this and many other occasions. And he thinks he can escalate tensions on the northern border, and this will deflect from what went on in the south. And that, I believe, is one of the reasons why the U.S. sent the fleet into the Mediterranean, which was to tell the Israelis that there were going to be some limits placed on what the U.S. would allow, and to prevent there being any escalation in which there was a conflict, a widening conflict that brought in Lebanon and Hezbollah and Iran.
Speaking of what the U.S. might allow, do you think that the U.S. will attempt to put the brakes on a total shutdown of Gaza in terms of electricity, food, medicine, etc.?
Well, we're in day five of this war, and it seems like the U.S. has absolutely no interest in doing anything. It's noteworthy that Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, is making a tour of the Middle East and stopping at all of the major Arab countries and Israel, and leaving out one country in particular, and that is Palestine. He's not meeting with anyone from Palestine. And some people on social media have said, why don't you include Gaza in your itinerary? You know, that would force you to see what's going on there.
Or even the West Bank, right?
Right, even the West Bank, actually, where there are serial murders and pogroms happening by settlers against Palestinians on the West Bank. If he could just see some of the funeral. By the way, four residents of a town called Kusra were murdered by terrorists. And at the funeral today with this family in mourning, the I call them Judeo-terrorists, came back and fired live ammunition at the mourners in the funeral. So it would be great if Blinken would be willing to even see something as toned down, in scare quotes, as what is happening in Kusra.
So any speculation on what might happen in the next few weeks, how long the fighting will go on, how much resistance can the Gazans put up at this point?
Well, I think they can put up a lot of resistance. In the past wars, they have, I would say, even though the Israelis have exacted terrible damage and losses of life on Gazans, the Hamas and the fighters in Gaza have not given up, and they've been steadfast. And there's no way that Israel, even if it demolishes and turns the whole enclave of Gaza into rubble, there'll still be resistance against Israel. This is not going to go away. And Israeli leaders are deluded into thinking that they can sort of impose an iron will on Gaza, and that's simply not possible. And as to your question about what will happen, unfortunately, there's a formula for these kinds of attacks. They usually take a couple of weeks, a month, before the U.S. or some other party steps in and said, you've had enough. And I don't think that, unfortunately, there is, I'm going to say this in a very cynical way, but I don't think there's been enough damage and enough killing yet for the U.S. to finally say, you know, we can't stomach this any longer. And I'm angry to have to say that. I'm disgusted to have to say that, but that seems to be the case.
What about this idea that Israel's going to go in and destroy Hamas? Is that serious, or is that just rhetoric, do you think?
I think it's rhetoric. I've been reading Israelis who are trying to analyze the statements coming from the army, which said that they will never allow Hamas ever again to rule Gaza. In order to make that a reality, Israel would have to commit 10, 20, 30,000 troops to occupy Gaza, and it would cost them billions of dollars to do so, and they would become the rulers of Gaza, and they would become responsible for everything that happened inside Gaza. I just don't think the Israelis have the stomach for that. And in addition, cynically, Israel needs Hamas, because as long as Hamas exists, they can discredit the idea of Palestinian unity. They can discredit the idea of creating a Palestinian state. And many times Netanyahu and others have said, we need to keep Hamas alive because it serves our own interests.
I remember years ago, didn't Israel start to fund Hamas in order to counter the PLO? What do they think of that now? I guess they don't care.
Well, there's so many examples of countries funding people that are their allies only to have their allies turn against them. In Afghanistan, that happened with the Taliban, which we supported against the Russians. And Israel actually helped start Hezbollah, believe it or not. One of the famous Mossad agents went to Beirut and helped to facilitate Hezbollah because they wanted to get the PLO out of Lebanon. And Hezbollah was a useful tool for that. And in the case of Hamas, Israel also did the same, as you said, because it wanted to drive a wedge between the PLO and weaken it. So now you have Hamas. Now you have your worst enemy in power after you helped create them.
Any sense of what the strategy of Hamas was in staging the attack? I mean, obviously, they knew there was going to be a massive Israeli response. What was the motivation there? Just to show that they were still a major force of resistance? What do you think?
Well, I think it was an act of desperation because they saw that the U.S. was going to help Saudi Arabia and Israel normalize relations, that the Saudis were going to betray the Palestinians after claiming they supported a two-state solution, a new state for Palestine. They saw they weren't going to get that. They saw that 300 Palestinians had been murdered by Israel since the beginning of this year. They saw the defiling of Al-Aqsa by Israeli border police firing tear gas, and they had just given up hope. So they were facing the genocide of Israel. They were facing pogroms in the villages on the West Bank. This was their way of saying, we are going to resist. This was Hamas's way of saying, you can't ignore us. We'll force you to pay attention to our plight and our suffering. And the world, of course, has reacted with disgust at this. But I think that in time, Israelis even are calling for Netanyahu's resignation, and they're disgusted with him, despite all the feelings of their suffering and their sorrow at the 1,200 now Israelis who were killed by them. So terrorism is a way of demanding attention, and it's an act of desperation because you feel no other outlet, because you are ignored and your interests are ignored. So they're saying to the world, you can't forget us. You can't ignore us. Our needs and our interests, our national interests, need to be addressed.
within Israel itself, you've had these protests against the kind of religious takeover of the country, and some have suggested that the natural allies of the protesters would have been the Palestinians, but now, well, they weren't interested in that anyway, but now it seems like the Hamas attack has created this new unity in Israel. Is that likely to last, do you think?
Well, there's always unity in Israel around wars, and the country rallies together, and you see that opinion polls show 80, 90% support for wars. But then that rather quickly fades when Israelis realize the enormity of their losses and realize that the attacks that they're mounting in Lebanon or Gaza aren't working. And then people turn against the war. And they were already turning against Netanyahu, as I mentioned. So we don't have to go far to see that Israelis are going to turn against the war. But in terms of the protests that were going on almost a year, pro-democracy protests against the right-wing government, many people inside those protests were saying that occupation, the occupation of the Palestinians had to end, and they were trying to make that point. However, I would say the majority of Israelis don't care about Palestine, and they don't believe that it's an issue that needs to be addressed, and they care only about the domestic issues, their own sort of problems and issues and interests of the Jewish population of Israel. And the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza are an afterthought. And that's another reason why Hamas had to do this, because they had to tell the Israelis, you may think that your own domestic affairs are the only thing that's important, but we're going to make you aware of the fact that we won't go away. So the protests were largely oriented towards the Jews, Israeli Jews, and they really gave short shrift to both Israeli-Palestinians, citizens of Israel, and the Palestinians and the occupied territories.
It's just kind of weird for an outsider to look at this and think these people are basically living in a state of war for decades and decades, and they just keep doing the same thing, and it's just going to be more of the same, and you'd think that they'd want to change it, but no.
Yeah, it's kind of an insane cycle. It's sort of psychotic cycle. And I think that there's really very little hope here for change. Unless the world community, unless international bodies are willing to intervene as they did in Serbia and Kosovo and to a lesser extent in Rwanda to stop the killing, to stop the genocide. I don't think there's any will to do that at this point. But that's the only way. Israel doesn't want to compromise. It doesn't want to allow a Palestinian state. And the Palestinians, on the other hand, most of them would be willing to do that. But there's no hope. Israel keeps electing right-wing governments. And one of the key planks of all of these governments is, A, not to even negotiate with the Palestinians at all, and B, to not permit a Palestinian state. So, unfortunately, it's a vicious cycle. And it can't be stopped, unless something radical changes. And actually, Hamas's attack might have been an attempt to say that. And that is that somebody better step in here, because we're not going away, and no matter what you do. So I'm very downbeat about prospects in the Middle East. And as an American Jew, that pains me. And I've lived in Israel and studied in Israel, and it really pains me to see so much hopelessness and so much despair, not to mention the killing and all of that, but just personally to be involved in this issue for 50 or 60 years as I have, and advocating for peace and being hopeful at one time, I've pretty much lost all hope.
That's journalist and activist Richard Silverstein speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on October 18th, 2023.